Welcome back to Chatting Rabbis, Eliezer Zalmanov in Munster, Indiana.
Mendy Chitrik from Istanbul, Turkey.
How are you, Mendy? Another week, another episode. It's good to see you again and talk to you, as always.
Good to see you, good to talk to you. We always have to find the time, it's not so easy. But yeah, Baruch Hashem, but we Mitzrayim Gealtanu, we're getting closer to Pesach, the breaking of the boundaries, the breaking of the things, and I really want to talk to you about the boundaries.
Boundaries, limitations, and inhibitions.
No, not these type of boundaries.
You mean real boundaries, not the esoteric talk? Real, down to earth?
Real, down to earth, esoteric, imagined boundaries. Or property. And that is this thing. It has some right to it and some not right to it. But let's talk about it, about this concept that some of our fellow shluchim guard their boundaries and don't allow encroachment on their boundaries, even though they're unable to fulfill all the needs the Jews in within their boundaries are in need of.
So you're saying territorial issues that exists in within the Chabad movement specifically?
In people's minds.
Right. A lot of it is in people's minds. A lot of it is in people's insecurities, because that's really one of the, that's why I started saying earlier about inhibitions, that when people are insecure and they have low self-esteem and low self-confidence, you have to start spreading yourself out and covering territory that you have no way of servicing, and that territory both in the physical sense, in the real estate sense, but also in the theoretical sense.
And you know how animals in the forest mark their boundaries from tree to tree. And somehow I think that we also have this thing within us, and it's time for us to break away from the boundaries.
Not all boundaries are breakawayable. Not all boundaries are created equal, and therefore not all boundaries can be done away with in the same fashion. And some boundaries are necessary. You know, even when we say Mitzrayim Galtanu, and using the metaphor that's always applied, that every person has to break free from his own boundaries and his own limitations in his own personal life and things that are holding him back, nevertheless, limitations exist. Limitations are a real thing, and sometimes they're there for our safety and are for our benefit. So you have to know why there are boundaries there to begin with. Why in the first place are there limitations, and why is there this holding back of territory, whether it's real or imagined. And once you can figure that out, then you can determine how to best go about solving the situation.
Okay, so now that we spoke about the capsule, let's try to speak about the issue itself.
Flesh it out a little bit. So the way for those of our listeners that are not familiar with how the Chabad system works, specifically the Shlichus system. So today you have shluchim that are considered head shluchim or regional directors, and they were given a large territory or large piece of real estate, and it's their job, literally their job, it's their mission to service all the Jews within that territory, within that wide area, whether it's a country or a state or part of a state or part of a country. And whether they were given that territory by the main office, by the Rebbe's office in 770, or by an extension of the Rebbe's office, whether it's by the head shliach, who gave a head shliach in a state who gave a person a certain city. And then, within their territory, it becomes their responsibility to serve the Jews with all their Jewish needs. And sometimes that includes also hiring other shluchim to take over certain parts of that territory. So whether it's a city within the state, or whether it's a region in the country, or it's a neighborhood within a city. And, you know, the more condensed and the more urban the Jewish community becomes, the more need there are for there to be shluchim in smaller areas. But what happens is that sometimes shlichus becomes a business for some people, and it becomes a personal kitty, as they say, a pocket, you know, and it becomes an income, a source of income, which is totally acceptable, and rightfully so, because a shliach deserves to earn a living. But when it comes at the expense of servicing the Jews in their territory and not allowing for another shliach or for a shliach in another area to reach out a little bit into someone else's area, that's when it becomes very personal, and that's when it becomes perhaps counterintuitive to the kavana, as we say, to the intent of the mission. And people become very protective and very closed-minded even when it comes to allowing someone else to service the Jewish communities within their so-called jurisdiction. Sometimes the excuse is that they're saving the place, they're saving the territory for their children, which is not a completely unheard of concept. Nepotism exists in Yiddishkeit, it exists in Jewish culture for many generations. But at the same time, if it comes at the expense of the Jews in that area that need to be serviced by a shliach, by a rabbi, and you're holding on to the place for your children, and in the interim, whether 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years, the Jews are not going to be taken care of, and they're not going to be serviced, then you're violating your shlichus, even if we can be so bold to make that statement.
But more often than not, I hear from people, and I've seen that many, many times, that people think two things. They think that they own a certain piece of property, as if they were God's appointed governors of the state or city. And they also think that the people that they serve are also property.
Right. Do you own your donors, in other words?
Man, you hardly own yourself. Ani lo nivreis yelo l'shamesh eskoini. A person has to come, or has to at least, I see myself as somebody who was placed in a place by divine providence, by Hashgacha Pratis, in order to do what the Rebbe wanted from us, and that is to increase Yiddishkeit, learn Torah, Chassidus, and be helpful for the spiritual and physical benefit of Jews, tourists, residents, expats alike. And if somebody else comes, so of course, to live in peace is always the best thing.
Well, that's also subjective. Living in peace is subjective, because at what cost? I'm just playing devil's advocate for a second, because you can justify not allowing someone else to come in and start operating in your community under the name of Chabad. Now, I understand that in your community things are a little bit different. The name of Chabad is not used officially. But if someone were to come into Munster, Indiana, and start, you know, doing Chabad-style outreach using the name Chabad. So if he's not using the name Chabad, then there's it's a different issue, but it's not something that you can necessarily control or you can necessarily have a good argument against. But if someone comes to my town and starts using the name Chabad and is doing things that I would not approve of, or that I believe that their Rebbe would not approve of, whatever those things are, you can use your imagination. And At some point, you have to fight it. You have to put an end to it. And again, that's why I said that concept is subjective, because at what point do I say, forget what you think is correct, forget what you think is appropriate, forget what you think the Rebbe would condone, as long as the work is being done. Who cares who's doing it? So just from the get-go, the problem with that argument is that there has to be some kind of structure. You can't operate any organization, not to mention a worldwide international organization, as decentralized as it may be, but you just can't operate without structure. You can't operate in a free-for-all. And, you know, if there's anarchy, then nothing gets done. Nobody accomplishes anything. So there has to be some kind of structure, but there also has to be some kind of, as we said at the beginning, setting your ego aside and setting your own self-confidence and self-esteem issues aside, and leave room for others, allow others to operate and to function and to be part of the team. And there has to be a way that it can work. I'm not blaming anyone necessarily or pointing fingers at anyone specific. I'm not even thinking about a specific case or a specific situation, just the general concept. And, you know, shlichus has been successful for so many years, and shluchim are successful for so many years, despite each individual shliach's personal shortcomings. I have my shortcomings, you have yours, and together we multiply each other's shortcomings. So the success of Chabad continues to flourish despite each and every one of our individual shortcomings.
What if somebody is going to move to Munster, and he'll be a real Hasidic guy who does things exactly the way the Rebbe said them, and you also agree that he does exactly the way they're supposed to. And just happens to be that he's a little bit more charismatic than you are.
At this point, I'll tell him, where do you want me to drop off the keys? Maybe 15 years ago, I would have fought him. But at this point, if someone wants to move to Munster and take me over and do my job for me and allow me to focus on, you know, I'm not going to be bored. I have plenty that I keep myself busy with. By all means. The only issue would be, and this is why I started off with this concept. The only issue is, would there be enough money? That's what it comes down to. It's a financial decision. Is there enough money in the community to support both me and him? And if I am able to support myself, or he's able to support himself without stepping on each other's toes, I don't see a problem with that. Different people have different egos. My ego is not the one that is not that I need to be at the head, and that I don't need to have my name on the letterhead, and I don't need to be the main shliach, and I don't need to be the big dog, so to speak. That's not my ego. For other people, that is. For me, it's a simple, practical, financial decision. Am I going to be able to support my family? If yes, I'm happy to have 12 shluchim, a dozen shluchim, two dozen shluchim in Munster, everybody operating on another block, and basically there's one Jew on every block in Munster, so let everybody have his one Jew that he deals with, and one
only
Jew that he...
blocks?
Well, you know, start with that, see how it works. It's an experiment. But in all seriousness, I think, and again, I'm only speaking from my experience and from my knowledge, is that what it comes down to is a financial issue. And like you said earlier, that a shliach does not own the people in his community, does not own and doesn't dictate where they should be making their donations to. It doesn't, you know, every human being has a free will and can decide to give to whatever organization they want. If you service him and he sees benefit, if a family sees benefit in supporting your organization over any other organization or in addition to other organizations, that means that you've accomplished something. It means that you've done something good. And when you have competition, then perhaps your competition, I know we spoke about this in an episode, I think last year at some point, the competition perhaps can drive you to do more and to do better, to prove to everyone that you are the right person to be doing this job and not the other guy. But again, for me, this is all in theory because nobody's moving to Munster. Nobody wants it.
I think that there's the other thing is that we have to see things. It did start in a major way in many places, is to see things in three-dimensional. Like, don't just have property to the length, but also have build up to the height. In other words, they could have boundaries within blocks. You could have boundaries in demographics. You have boundaries in occupation. Boundaries in different lines of work. You could have people who are involved in teaching. People involved in adult education. People involved in teenage work. People involved, and that's definitely so in the bigger cities, in bigger concentration. I'm not speaking specifically about Munster, Indiana, even though me and you both have our opinions on things that have to do in many things, even outside of our very immediate surroundings, and even if it has zero practical implications to us. And that also has to do a lot with many people around the Chabad globe have very, very strong opinions on many, many issues that have nothing to do with their practical lives. And
you can convince yourself, you know, say in Yiddish, that it does relate to you. But you're right. The truth is that so many of these things don't relate to us directly. But we do have opinions.
We do have opinions because, okay, that's who we are. So I actually, people do come and ask me very often, can we come move to Turkey? And I say, well, if you could support yourself, you're more than welcome to move to Turkey and do whatever you want and whatever you can. Nobody's going to stop you. And if anybody's listening to this podcast...
With your blessing, and you'd sign off on them as being a shliach there?
With my blessing, and if you want to be part of the Chabad system, I would put some requirements, on some theological and ideological issues which are important for me. And I... And also some advice, because if somebody would come here and invest his time and his life and kids, which I don't advise people to do, but if somebody will come to do it, and he will, I will give him some requirements that eventually with the time he will understand, or hopefully he will understand why there were important things that I have learned from experience, good or bad, of many, many years being in the field. But still, if anybody wants to come, and if anybody is hearing this podcast and has the intention of wanting to come to Turkey to establish a place of Torah, by all means.
You know, in the state of Indiana, my father-in-law is the head shliach, and for years he refused to allow people to move to small towns. And Munster is not considered small in his eyes. It's small-ish, but today people are moving to towns with 200 Jews or less. And for years he refused to allow people to move to such kind of places. Well, I mean, not refuse. You want to move there, you can move there, but don't use the name Chabad. And he was finally convinced by a few young guys that they can make it work. His biggest concern was not so much that they would be bored and not so much that they would step on his toes. Neither of those really bothered him. His main concern was how they would support themselves financially. And what he doesn't want is for Chabad to show up in a town and set up shop and announce that we're here, and then within 2 years be gone because they couldn't make it. So for 30 years, he was very, very specific about the types of places and types of towns that he agreed to allow a shliach to move to. But over the last 5-10 years, he became a lot more liberal in that. And basically because the landscape has changed and the attitude has changed, and people convinced him that they would be able to make it work one way or another. How exactly? I don't know. The fact that I'm surviving, and I use the term surviving figuratively, surviving in Munster, how I'm surviving here for 19 and a half years, that's a miracle too. But people, young shluchim, I mean, my hat's off to them for moving to these small towns in Indiana and around the country and around the world, and somehow they make it work. So I don't know how it works, and if people are willing to do it and people are ready to throw their hat in the ring and dedicate their lives to it, that's wonderful. And I hope, you know, both for their sake and for the sake of Chabad as a whole, and of course for the Institute of the Rebbe's Shlichus, I hope that it works out, that they succeed and that they continue making the world a place where the Rebbe's mission can be realized every day, even in the furthest corners.
So Munster is a suburb of Chicago. Where was the demarcation line between the big shots of Chicago, Hed Shluchim, and Indiana?
So first of all, the Hed Shluchim of Chicago are not big shots. They're nice guys.
I'd say figuratively, because, you know, usually right. Shluchim have... But I understand that the good neighboring also requires you to maintain that I keep in line, and I apologize for any...
We get along with very well with all of the shluchim in Chicago. We're literally on the state line. Like, from my house, I can walk 10 minutes, and I'll be in the state of Illinois. But Chicago is not right on the state line. Chicago is about 30 miles in. So the closest shliach in Chicago proper, the closest shliach in the state of Illinois to me, is about a half hour, 45-minute drive, depending on traffic. So there's no real territorial issues as far as that's concerned. There's nobody. There are very few Jews between us and the actual city of Chicago. There are some on the south side or in the south suburbs of Chicago that we do service. Again, the communities over there are very small. So when we moved here almost 20 years ago, the Het Shliach of Illinois at the time was Rabbi Daniel Moskowitz, Olav HaShalom, and I had written on my website that we service the Jewish communities of Northwest Indiana and Chicago's south suburbs. So he called me, very friendly phone call. He said, I saw that you put this on your website and I have no problem on it, but just know that if one day I do decide to send the shliach to that area, I'm going to ask you to take that line off of your website. And I said, no problem. And I got along with him very well until his untimely passing a few years ago. And his sons took over, and I get along very well with them. Baruch Hashem, they're all fine shluchim, doing good work, and we rarely, never have we had an incident where we step on each other's toes. We're far enough from each other.
They didn't send anybody to South Chicago yet.
No, but if a young shliach decides that he wants to move there and figure out how to make it work, I'd be fine with that. And hopefully his head shluchim would be fine with that as well.
And you'll take the line off your head, off your headline.
No problem. Happy to do that. Again, no, I'm perhaps more idealistic than some other people. And if a Jewish is being serviced by a shliach, whether it's me or someone else, I'm not offended, and I'm not concerned with what it'll take away from me.
Right, but you are aware that some places are not as.
Of course. I'm not naive enough to believe that everyone views things in the same way as I do. And maybe that's because not everybody has a podcast, and so not everybody can get up and start making announcements and proclamations that are heard around the world. But of course people view things differently, and people perhaps allow other considerations to get in the way. I'm not perfect. I'm not the best type of shliach out there, but this is how I operate, and it works for me. At least it's worked for me for the last 20 years.
But I'm sure that it is for some people, it is a point of confrontation. It's a point of deep sense of despair and have issues of serious issues, because you know if people get an assigned area. And somehow they decide to build their house right on that border of that area, to build a Chabad house. And they can't really tell congregants, okay, you could only come here if you're part of this zip code. But if you're not part of this correct zip code, you are not allowed into my Chabad house because you got to drive 10 miles down to the next person. Also, you can't expect people to always build up right the middle of the center if they're like a lighthouse, that they have to be... exactly in the center of their property, so to speak.
Yeah, I can see that being an issue, 100%. I mean, I can see that one day being an issue here too. But for the time being, it's not an issue. You know, there's an area in northwest Indiana that's about 45 minutes away from here, and there are some Jews that live there. There's a Reformed temple there. And a lot of people that live in that area come to our programs, come to our events. And sometimes we go out there and we do classes and events. And the other day, I was talking to my wife about the potential of there perhaps one day being a shliach there. And whoever that ends up being, and wherever that ends up being, right now it's not really possible. But, you know, if it ends up being one of my children, not that I'm saving it for anyone, but who knows. There would be maybe some slight issues of some of the people that live there would stop coming to our programs and would maybe stop supporting us and supporting another shliach. But again, this is all in the very far future and not very practical at this moment. But these considerations do come up, and there's nothing you can do about it, because we're all human and we're far from perfect, and we have our own personal considerations, and we're very subjective when it comes to these things. So.
And what's the mechanism of solving these conflicts?
That there should be so much money to go around that no one has to ever be worried about how they're going to put food on their table and how they're going to feed their families and clothe their children for Yontif. And not, again, I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek, because money doesn't solve all issues. But it does solve a lot of it is the cause of a lot of the problems that exist.
Right, but you say that it's mostly a financial issue, more than ego.
I think so. I think at the end of the day, it's financial. Not to say that I don't need the money, but I think that for more people, for some people, it's a bigger consideration than for others. I'm mistapik b'mu'at, as they say. Mm-hmm. Let me take care of my family. Let me pay for my personal expenses, my moised, my Chabad house's expenses, and let me have enough to allow for my Chabad house to grow and to service my community, and I'll be very happy. That's me. I don't know if others view things the same way. You know, a few years ago there was a large hurricane in the Caribbean, and we have a local family over here that likes supporting a lot of various causes. So whenever there's a worldwide tragedy, an international tragedy, they call me and they ask me who to donate to. They donate very generously to us, and they also want to help. They helped, you know, with the tsunami, and they helped with Ukraine, and they helped with hurricanes. So whenever there's an issue, they know that if you donate to Chabad, your money will be the most wisely spent. So there was this hurricane in the Caribbean, and they called me and they asked me for an address to send a donation to. So I gave them the address of the local Chabad hurricane relief campaign. A couple of days later, I got a call from the shliach who was spearheading this campaign. He's like, "I got this donation from someone in your community. They sent us $10,000. I don't know, I wasn't expecting it." And actually, he was expecting something because I called him. I told him to expect it, but he didn't realize it was going to be that much. He says, "So how much do I owe you for it? Like, what's your cut?" I told him, "You don't have to give me anything. I'm very happy to have facilitated this donation for you and for your hurricane relief efforts." He couldn't believe it. He says, "Really? You're not expecting like 10, 20%?" It's like, "I'll send you a check for $1,000 if you want." I said, "No, I'm fine. I'm okay. Use it in good health and rebuild your moisid."
It's a beautiful story, and I've had this experience quite a few times with some shluchim. I had a shliach who had a friend who was coming here, and he made sure to introduce me to him and told him that he should support us and asked me to ask. And I've had the case with a shliach who drove me to one of his biggest supporters, and he said, "Well, this guy comes from your hometown, was born in your hometown. He should." So before, just as I stepped out, I said, "Listen, no, you brought me to him. Do you expect how much do you expect? You know, if he he says, he told me, "Listen, if you ever mention any word about that, I'm going to tell the guy to never give you a penny. I don't. I'm bringing you here. He's a friend of mine. He could be a friend of yours." And go ahead. That's a whole other subject that which we spoke today about the, demarcation of property and territory. And we didn't speak about so much about the issues of fundraising and people's people. And I had somebody visiting my house a couple weeks ago, who told my wife that my rabbis complained that I have too many rabbis. And we told him, "Don't worry, I'm when you know Machaya told him, "Don't worry, my husband is not intending on being your rabbi, but if you want to support us, you can."
Right, and that's an important message too, that we don't own them, they don't own us, we reach our own people. But anyway, we always try to end on a positive note.
And that is a positive note.
Exactly. So, as someone recently said, it was quoted on a podcast I was listening to earlier this week. Blut wird gissen, aber Shalom wird sein.
I'm not listening to that podcast.
So the loose translation is that all fights eventually lead to peace, as long as the fight was done with the right intention. So hopefully, God willing, there are no fights, and Oyseh Shalom b'mroimov, there shall be peace, and everybody gets along, and we should bring the Rebbe Nachas and continue doing what we're doing.
Love talking to you.
Absolutely a pleasure. Zeig isn't.